Letter number 62, June the 1st, 1988. Will Rome approve of the consecrations? This June promises to be some month. June 30th is the fateful day for the consecration of society bishops at Econe in Switzerland, and at the time of writing, it is still unresolved between Rome and the society whether these consecrations will have Rome's official approval or not. The reports appearing in the press on the state of the negotiations are distinctly confused. Early in May, the Philadelphia Inquirer, for instance, reported that Archbishop Lefebvre and Cardinal Ratzinger had signed an agreement on May 5th. In the middle of May, the Archbishop confirmed on a radio program in Europe that he had indeed signed an agreement, but he said there were certain points still to be cleared up, while on May 23rd, a Vatican spokesman said that no definitive agreement had been reached, but as soon as one was reached, it would be announced. So says the National Catholic Register, June 5th. On June 1st, a Californian friend told me, quote, from a highly reliable priestly source, that a final accord was reached on May 24, whereby the Society of St. Pius X was to be recognized, the Archbishop's suspension was to be lifted, and Rome was to grant permission for one bishop to be consecrated for the Society on August 15. However, no such accord has, between May 24 and the time of writing, been officially announced, either by the Society or by Rome, so I think we must assume that there are still, quote, points to be cleared up, unquote, whatever they may be. At this point, it is much more important to pray than to be listening for the latest rumour, because a crucial moment in church history has arrived. Will the church authorities, by approving the society's bishops, take the decisive step back to Catholic tradition, without which, as we well know, but they do not, the Catholic Church cannot survive? We may hope that Rome will finally approve the consecrations. The Pope's letter of April 3rd to Cardinal Ratzinger, in which he pressed for an understanding to be reached, was made public, maybe to anticipate opposition from the liberals to any such misunderstanding. Negotiations must have begun soon after for an agreement to have been signed on May 5th, which is significantly the feast day of one of the greatest heroes of Catholic tradition, Pope St. Pius V. Now, that common agreement seems not to have been final, but an impetus and momentum towards agreement seem to have been generated, which can only help. For instance, in the accord of May 5th and of May 24th, one wonders, contained correction. For instance, if the accord of May 5th and of May 24th contained terms granting approval to the society and the archbishop, how could Rome now convincingly disapprove of them? Any such terms, once signed by Rome, represent a concession to the truth which Rome can with difficulty take back. Nor may Rome wish to take them back. Opening his arms wide to all creeds on the horizon, the Holy Father may sincerely wish that Archbishop Lefebvre be not excluded from his pluralist embrace. Such is the logic of his ecumenism. Similarly, that Luther's exclusion from the Church was the Catholic's fault is a lie. But if this Pope, by, for instance, his official visit to the Lutherans in Rome, indicates he has any sympathy for such untruths, may he not regard himself as bound to avoid excluding Archbishop Lefebvre from the Catholic Church? The logical liberal knows that he must crush the truth as being his only real adversary, but the well-meaning liberal will embrace even truth. Such an attitude certainly fits the Pope's letter of April 8 and is grounds for hope that he will insist on overriding what looks like to him like minor obstacles, correction. Such an attitude certainly fits the Pope's letter of April 8th and is grounds for hope that he will insist on overriding what looks to him like minor obstacles in order to avoid what looks to him like a major threat of schism. For your own part, I am sure that a large number of you would welcome an agreement with immense relief. Whatever ill we may have to say of Rome, nevertheless, which of us as Roman Catholics wishes to go through even the mere appearance of being cut off from Rome? However, none of us can be wishing for an agreement at absolutely any price. There would be a price too high to pay, the placing of in peril of Catholic tradition. Say what you will about the twilight of semi-approval, semi-disapproval, of which the Society of St. Pius X and the Tridentine Mass have officially existed for the last several years. Rather more disapproval than approval, to put it mildly. Correction. Say what you will about the twilight of semi-approval, semi-disapproval, in which the Society of St. Pius X and the Tridentine Mass have officially existed for the last several years, rather more approval than disapproval, to put it mildly. You have to admit that the corresponding independence from control by the liberals has enabled the Catholic Mass and priesthood to be preserved true to their nature. Nay, the faith of many Catholics, including probably our own faith, has been so strengthened and purified by this trial that were God to decide the trial must be extended and even intensified by a failure of these present negotiations, I am sure most of us would not change course, but would simply ask God for the grace of continued endurance without bitterness or sectarianism. So our independence from the modernists, even if it has meant our apparent detachment from the official church, has not been the worst of evils. On the contrary, an agreement failing to safeguard tradition would certainly be the worst of evils. For why have we been enduring and battling all these years except to preserve the essentials of Jesus Christ's one true church? What do we have to offer the official church except those essentials? What use would we be to the official church without those essentials? What use would it be to them to reabsorb us if they do not at the same time reabsorb tradition? Such a dissolution of our opposition may precisely be the modernist dream. Some would even say it is Rome's purpose in these negotiations. But be that as it may, we at least know that our abandoning tradition would be their disaster. Correction. Such a dissolution of our opposition may precisely be the modernist dream. Some would even say it is Rome's purpose in these negotiations. But be that as it may, we at least know that our abandoning tradition would be their disaster. Hence, dearly as we ourselves might long for an end to our status as outcasts from Rome, we cannot long for an agreement at any price. To take one example, if it is true that around May 24, Rome agreed to approve the consecration of one bishop for the society, that is a great concession. But would one be really enough to safeguard tradition? Could not one alone slip from the truth, as many good men have done? Or could not one alone easily be made to meet with, quote-unquote, an accident? Whereas to arrange the three accidents would be rather less convincing. Without any doubt, much the best judge of what agreement will or will not sufficiently safeguard tradition and the faith is, by his past record, Archbishop Lefebvre. How many times over the last 13 years, since the going began to get tough in 1975, have we not been tempted to wish that he would not take the tough decision to climb still craggier heights? Yet each time we followed him, were we not delighted to find ourselves emerging into another sunlit Catholic upland, where our children, for instance, could breathe clean Catholic air? Were he a modern leader, one of the many who follow their followers, he would have taken a rest from climbing long ago to regain his peace and good standing within the official church. Instead, he has taken the heroic decisions, and the heroic decisions have been right. In conclusion, it is for the sake of the entire Catholic Church that we must now close ranks behind Archbishop Lefebvre. in the hour of what may be his greatest trial. He has never failed us yet. Why should he now? This June is also the month of the Semmering's move to the Midwest. On the morning of June 21, there will be a high mass here for the feast of St. Aloysius Gonzaga, patron saint of seminarians, at 10 a.m., after which there will be a farewell lunch party outside or beneath the new chapel. Bring your own dish. You are all invited and welcome. Besides bidding farewell to the seminarians, you will be able to admire the resplendent new white polyvinyl cladding of the new chapel. Faced with alternatives of either pulling down the entire structure and certainly losing well over $500,000, or having another $40,000 to shield the exterior, the Society has chosen the latter course. We have had to borrow from the bank to do it, but at least now what has already been spent is protected, and we retain the option of an eventual use of the building. If there was an agreement with Rome, who knows how soon the church might be filled. Then on June 22nd, one truck should be enough to move to Winona what worldly goods the seminary will be taking with it. In fact, we are leaving behind us everything that St. Ignatius Retreat House will need to start into immediate operation in July, because it makes little sense to pay to move things to the Midwest and have to replace them in the East, instead of simply buying them or often being given them in the Midwest. However, there are still serious expenses involved in our westward migration, so I do beg of you to be as generous as ever with your monthly gifts. For several months now, the seminary has been running two establishments. We are presently running on empty. Thank you in advance. In Winona, the renovations are mostly done, but voluntary workers alongside the seminaries will be very welcome throughout the summer. The renovations have been costly, and to complete them without interruption, we have had to borrow. Patience. There are no ordinations at Ridgefield this summer, but two former seminarians of Ridgefield, Reverend Mr. Peter LeMay of Rhode Island and Reverend Mr. James Doran of Michigan, are due to be ordained priests by Archbishop Lefebvre in Acorn on June 29, and they will both be serving you soon in Idaho and Kansas unless plans change. In addition, the Society is planning in August to import into the United States one or two newly ordained priests from abroad. America is being looked after as best the Society can. The harvest will come. A note for priests. At Ridgefield, there is a priest retreat from the evening of Monday, July 18, to midday Friday, July 22nd. All priests are welcome, except to celebrate here the Novus Ordo liturgy. Come under a pseudonym if you like. No questions asked. Similarly, any and all priests are welcome to visit the seminary in Winona from July onwards and to stay overnight or several days. No questions. Just answers. Lastly, we are enclosing the text of the music on the seminary's latest tape, Reign Jesus and Mary. Order from Ridgefield or from Winona, and during June, beg the Sacred Heart to give light and strength to one great Archbishop.